Today's show is in partnership with Canadian Blood Services, celebrating making all the difference to patients across Canada.
I'm going deep. I feel like Halo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead, I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Thank you so much, Capital. It is the Going Deep podcast. I'm Donovan Bennett, and I'm going deep on a really important conversation today. And if you've listened to this podcast for a while, you know by now that it is the intersection, the nexus, if you will, of sports and other areas of our culture, science, tech, philanthropy, and health. And that's actually what we're going to focus on today, specifically for Canadians. And I actually had the pleasure of learning a lot more about our healthcare system, its strength, what it needs to continue to be strong, and one of the lifelines of us here in our country, and that obviously would be our blood. This is a topic I'm really excited about. Also, you should know before I go much further, the video roundtable of this discussion will be in our show notes. You can find the link to our conversation that is inspired by the great work being done at Canadian Blood Services. I had the benefit of giving blood, which, as you'll hear over the next little bit, I encourage you to do, but also learning about the need for blood in our country. Really, quite frankly, the need for more blood donors, specifically of ethnically diverse backgrounds, because of our country's growing population, which is important because we need to continue to feed our growing economy. We are having a much more diverse need for blood than we have ever before. You can look at the immigration and growing population as a reason why we need to diversify our blood donor base and our stem cell registry. Now, in sports, we deal with numbers all the time. So this is one that really stopped me in my tracks. We need 100,000 new blood and plasma donors every year. That's what it's going to take to keep our blood donor base and stem cell registry in a good place. I was happy to find out that I'm not the only person concerned about this issue and now passionate about it. Some of my friends here at Sportsnet in the sports community feel the exact same way. We've seen sports rally around worthy causes in the past. This certainly is one. Now, I'm sure you're thinking, well, what does that have anything to do with sports? Well, I was lucky enough to be a part of a roundtable with different members of the sports community to talk about this issue, hopefully influencing it because of people's love for sports, but also talk about what role our sports infrastructure can play in awareness, in the same way it's played a role in awareness for things like conquering COVID-19 and cancer research and donations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This as well is an issue we'd love to focus on. And I did that with a couple people in the sports context. I had a roundtable conversation. I spoke to Savannah Hamilton, our wonderful sideline reporter for our Toronto Raptors broadcast, who, as you'll hear, this issue is very close to her heart. And I actually went and donated with Savannah. So I went through the process with her. Jemma Mahalia, who is an assistant coach for the Raptors, Canadian-born, has two championships, one with the Toronto Raptors, one with the Golden State Warriors. But advocacy, I think, is going to be his lasting legacy. And this is a cause he felt called to speak on. And sprinkled in a very important Raptors fan, but brings greater importance to this conversation, and that would be Dr. Sheila Wijesinghe, who is a family doctor at St. Michael's Hospital and the medical director of primary care outreach at Women's College Hospital. She is someone who has worked in community in terms of making our healthcare system work for all Canadians. And so certainly she brought lots of expertise to this conversation because of the practical work that she's doing every day. Let's listen to and learn from all of them as I take you on a journey talking about the need for blood and the great work being done at Canadian Blood Services.
We have so many things that make us different. Age, race, gender, geography, wealth, and health. But no matter how different we all seem on the outside, on the inside, we all need one thing to live. Blood. Canada is a beautifully diverse country, and for that reason, we need to diversify our greatest lifeline. Even though it's in you to give, our most natural abundant resource is in short supply. Someone you know and love may one day need this lifeline. And as a community, it's our responsibility to take care of each other. You can make an impact and save lives. The time to take action is now.
So Jamma, like you, I look at everything from a sports context. And in sports, when there's a critical need, what do? We meet, we review, we drill. In some sports, we have a symposium, try to fixing things, not just assuming it's going to be fixed on its own. I see this issue the same way. We need to start to have the conversation. How do you view how we can start to make this a much bigger scenario because it is a critical need?
Yeah, I think sport's amazing, right? Because it sort of brings people together and everyone watches sport. But there's a lot of work that goes behind the scenes. And for a coach on an NBA coaching staff, like, we spend so much time talking about an opponent, talking about what our players are going to do, hours and hours of dialogue. And I think the dialogue creates the environment where there's information that makes sense. So we can actually then run a play or guard a pick and roll or do whatever we need to do to win the game. But that dialogue had to happen. That conversation had to happen because that's how you get awareness. That's how your players know what they're supposed to do. And I think in this field, the more we can discuss, the more we can talk about things, and the more there's authentic sort of discussion from people to people, and then like professionally as well, the more people can understand what they can actually do and how they can help.
Yeah, you understand this because it's close to your heart.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, both my parents at one point in time needed a blood transfusion. Luckily, my mom didn't ended up requiring it, but that was like my birth. But outside of that, you know, my dad actually needed one and blood was available for him. And so this is definitely something that was near and dear to my heart. And, you know, it's funny how we don't typically talk about donating blood. It's not a dinner time conversation, but it should be technically, like, you know, like if it's, you know, if there's millions of people who need blood, like almost on a daily basis. And so I kind of wonder, like, why isn't it more popular? Why haven't I even myself donated in the past before recently? And, you know, I challenge myself in those beliefs. And I just think that, like, yeah, like, you know, it's something that, as you mentioned, like, the conversation needs to be had. And it's an open discussion that needs to be, honestly, normalized.
Yeah, when you say we, certainly you're looking at the BIPOC community who's mm-hmm. not having this conversation, specifically the Black community. And when I saw some of the numbers and the stats, it reframed how I thought about it. Because I'm someone who in my professional career, my daily life, I like to think of myself as pro-Black. And putting forth that message and walking, you know, my talk, I need to do something if I want to be pro-Black. And the cost is going and getting some snacks for half an hour. Like, what are we talking about? Where I could save lives? That's what made me say, okay, this is not something I'm going to do. It's a habit that I need to start to do continually. That's the why for me. But what is the why in terms of what it means in the clinic, in the community, for families?
I mean, it's incredible. I'm so glad that we're talking about it because I see my patients on a daily basis, patients who have lost family members because they didn't have access to care. And patient, like, this is such an important discussion for us to have because we see it in terms of not just life and death, but also just living a healthy life. Blood transfusions extend people's lives. They help people live energetically and do their best. And I find in my own practice, the stories I've seen, and when I worked in the hospital setting and doing obstetrics and working with my patients, it was very clear that we needed to have more diversity within our donor pool as well. And that's something that's really lacking. And it's all on all of us to be able to be part of this. And I understand, like, the reasons why maybe people aren't able to donate, because traditionally the healthcare system is not equitable, and there's systemic racism that exists within the healthcare system that makes us wonder if this is where we should be going to contribute. But really, I actually think we should be, if we can. And we can change things in terms of the landscape of how we treat our patients if we have more people donating from different communities to make that difference. And I see it with kids in my practice who have had sickle cell and had needed to have regular transfusions. It's allowed them to go to school, to function, to play sports, to be a part of their community, to elderly individuals who have anemia and aren't able to get out of bed because they're so low on energy, and having that transfusion has made such an impact on their lives. And it really, all of us will be patients at one point in our life. And it's so important for us to recognize the role that we have to play to support each other. And I think this is part of this conversation, is to normalize it and make it part of our routine.
That's a bar. All of us will be patients at one point.
Yeah, I'm
sorry. Like, but that changes the way you view the topic.
Totally.
It's not giving to someone else. It's giving to a system, yes, that at some point you're going to need.
Yeah.
At some point. The big aspect is not just dispelling misinformation, but garnering more information. Mm-hmm. What did you learn about giving going through the process?
Oh, a lot. Like, one, that the hassle is like next to none. I personally had a really great experience with it because I didn't feel any pain in terms of donating. I think that's a hesitancy within the Black community or BIPOC community in general. It's like, well, I don't know about needles and I don't know about this. And like, listen, I hear it from even my own relatives talking about it like that. And so, you know, going in there, I was like a little bit, I don't know what this experience is going to be like for me. But then coming out, I was like, that was like, if a 2 out of 10 for me, like personally, and I know everyone's experience could be different, but that's how it was for me. Outside of that, you know, I've had, I guess, hesitancy in the fact that I've heard so much maybe misinformation in the past too, in the fact that, oh, if you have a piercing, you can't donate blood. If you have a tattoo, you can't donate blood. And I definitely, like, you can see my ears right here, they're pierced. But like, you know, if that was the case, then I guess there'd be a big shortage.
Right.
That's like, once again, misinformation that you almost automatically, well, guess it can't be me, and then you just dispel it, like, just like that. So it definitely was a learning experience for me, that's for sure, and just both the process and just even getting to the actual facility to donate was also a learning experience, and learning that, like, oh, I'm more than eligible. I should be making this a habit, actually, in my year.
Gemma, when you think of this issue in our trauma informing our reluctance to be part of the process, what comes to mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, just even having this dialogue now and this discussion and this awareness that, like, that blood is different and it's not like something that someone else can just do it and it's gonna be fine and other people will donate. Like, if I wanna help people in my community, I need to help too. And just that awareness, because I think you need to help look after your own people and help and support. And like, I didn't know that. Like, I think you assumed, and I think oftentimes you see, oh, there's blood donation drive and there's, you know, thousands of people gonna do it and the blood system's gonna be fine and everything's gonna work. But no, it's very specific types and very unique things. And I may have something that no one else in the world has. And that's, can help that person live. That's different, that's powerful. And I think that if you can think of it in those terms, you can then hopefully sort of work through some of the barriers of the past and work through some of the barriers of a medical system that hasn't supported you in the past, or work through some of the barriers of feeling uncomfortable or not welcomed or not supported yourself in your own sort of like navigating the world. And so that can be the motivator and sort of the thing. And I'm kind of excited, like, I can help somebody. And that's really powerful.
No question. You talk about helping your own community. What have you seen in terms of calls to action to community and how they've been sometimes reluctant, but sometimes been willing to step up?
It's incredible when a community knows that somebody within their own community needs that support. I recently had a patient who was going through cancer treatment, and he's from the Congolese community, and they did a call out to their church and they did a call out to the rest of their community, and people just came out. And it was so incredible to see, because they were worried about getting a match. And they were able to find one through this network of people that they just knew and they loved. And it ended up just spiraling into this thing where people realized they came together as a community, they had music and food and just invited everybody out to realize we could do this for each other. And we can protect each other, and this is how we take care of each other, is by doing something that they realized was actually quite simple. But there are these barriers that came up, but once they did it, it became this rolling thing, and people were signing up to become regular donors because they realized that they could have this impact. So I just think it's incredible when you lean on community and you ask. First thing is asking, because I think a lot of people don't realize that they haven't been asked actually to donate. And when they realize that the impact that they can make is life-altering and life-saving, it's huge.
Well, I love that you mentioned protection when it comes to community, because what we're talking about is human behavior, right? There's a reason why animals travel in packs to protect each other. And when you're thinking of BIPOC people and the clear and present danger in their minds every day in terms of the fight or flight response, you're worried about the wage gap, you're worried about racial profiling and carding in your community, you're worried about an education system that's not necessarily fair, housing discrimination. So you don't necessarily think, as you're managing all that, the availability of blood being a clear and present danger to your community. But quite frankly, it is. So I think even reframing some of the things that are challenges for community to rally again is really important. And I think it would change the way we view this issue.
Yeah, it's funny. I think, like, even in the sporting world, like, you know, the big, tough athletes and stuff, but I think sometimes this sense of, like, oh, I have to give blood and do that, and there's almost this fear factor that comes into it as well. But I think that, like, education and discussion and, like, almost like the first time you do something, and then you're like, oh, it wasn't that bad. I can do this, right? And I think for athletes, but for all of us as well, like, getting past that first barrier, that first hurdle, is often the hardest thing to do. And I think you see, and what I would encourage people is, you gotta come back again.
Yeah.
Like, it's great to do it once, but now, once you realize it's easy, relatively, then just keep on coming back and keep on helping.
Well, we did it together, and we were former athletes. My former is a lot more than yours. But even going through it, and understanding, athletes always want to know everything about their body all the time. And for me, you go through the process, the screening process, you're learning about your body and how you are in that situation. And of course, as an athlete, I'm competing. I'm like 137 hemoglobin. I'm perfect. I'm out here 36.4 Celsius temperature. Right? I was so amped to be like, yes, I'm ready. My iron is proper. Yeah. I'm hydrated. I can do this. And there's an education, but also, like, the athlete side of me, like, I was competing, giving blood against her.
You heard me. You heard me. I was like, so who has more vein clout?
That's right.
Me or him? Because you know, that was just like honestly, like, the athlete coming out and just knowing, being so aware of our bodies. One thing I'd also love to add to the conversation, you guys mentioned community. As somebody who is BIPOC but also biracial, you know, it's a unique experience right then and there. And I think it's also, like we talked about this even when we're donating, the fact that the way the world is going is that there is just going to be more and more biracial people that kind of look like me in the future. And so for me to kind of, you know, donate and then give back and kind of set the tone for next generations, I think that's so important as well, because, you know, there's just going to be a more call, there's going to be a more direct call for that in the future. And so I see the importance within that as well. So as much as we could talk about, like, just like one sort of community, there's also blends of communities as well. And so I think that that's why, like, you know, I personally felt it was really important for me to kind of contribute that way as well.
It's a great point. And this panel is a great example of that. You have, you know, two products of a biracial relationship, two people who have biracial kids. So when you look at the demographics, not only the tanning of our country, we're getting more and more diverse and more people from all over the world, but that is an aspect to it as well. In terms of those rare matches and the antigens, talk nerdy to me.
Give me the
actual explanation as to why it's important to have a diverse pool of blood to provide.
Yeah, so on our blood cells, we have antigens, or they're markers, and there's so many. So I think we're familiar with ABO, blood types, that people will know you're type A, type B, type O, and there's also Rh negativity or positivity, which is another antibody, so that's why you're B positive or AB positive. But there's so many more antigens out there. There's 600 types, and your blood cells have those, and those are carried on through your family, so they're genetically carried through each generation. And so as a result, there's uniqueness from the different ethnic groups that carry these different antigens. And so you want to make sure that we have enough of a diverse pool to be able to match properly. Otherwise, we may not be able to match in those situations. And when you bring up the point around biracial individuals, there's even more diversity that comes up. And so we really do depend upon increasing the diversity of our donor population to be able to match those to that level of diversity that we know is emerging even more every day. And so certainly we know that there is this, the antigens and the matching is such a key piece of this process. And this is why it's so important to have this discussion, to make sure that we have representation from across different ethnicities to be able to ensure that we have it available for you if you need it, regardless of your ethnicity, we have you covered.
I'm just moved, like, I don't know, as a parent, like hearing you speak. Like, I think when you're younger, you just think about yourself. We all of us kind of do that. But as soon as you become a parent, and I think about my kids and this conversation about, like, there's Swazi, there's some Scottish, there's some Korean, there's a whole lot going on for my kids. And if they were in need and they needed something, I would want someone to help that could, right?
Totally.
And I think that's the, when you can give back in that way and you can, like, think about what would your kid want or need and, like, thinking of your kid being sick and that there is someone that could help, but they just haven't, maybe they don't know the information or haven't been exposed to it, like, that makes this really important and this makes the dialogue really matter.
Yeah, that makes me think of, you know, I had a patient who, again, going back to, like, the sickle cell situation where a patient's child who was 8 years old and needed these recurrent transfusions and the mom would come in tears because she was worried about, because he would have some reaction sometimes to donations because of these different antigens. And that process made it less likely to find another match the next time he needed a transfusion. And I just remember sitting with this mom and she would be in tears because she would worry, is there going to be a match next time when he needs this transfusion? Is he going to have a stroke because of this condition? Is he going to have some other something happen that we may not be able to actually help him with? And that became such a key piece of, it really struck me. I didn't realize the significance myself, even though I've been practicing for a while. I realized in that moment, I'm like, well, this is why this is so important for us to have this discussion and to make sure that we have the ability to have the diversity that we need to ensure that that child, anybody's child, has the ability to be cared for.
I think the thing too, when you talk about the aspects of, you know, our children and really making it a habit so it's less of an issue for our children's children, is the need is massive. Like, we're not talking about, you know, a one possession, two possession game here. 100,000 new donors is what we need. What has COVID and its impact on operating rooms, hospitals, and that lag done in terms of affecting the need in this issue?
Yeah, so during the pandemic, we saw a lot of shutdown of many of the things that we did, especially elective surgeries, for example. And so they all slowed down during the pandemic. And so we focused on urgent surgeries only. And so the need actually decreased a little bit for blood products. But we're ramping back up and we are catching up to all the backlog that we've had over the last several years. And we're at high volumes now. And we require now more blood products in order to actually meet the demand. Mm-hmm. Even during elective surgeries, which are very controlled setting, the controlled surgeries, there may be a need for a transfusion. There may be a need for intervention. And again, we need that backup of having all of the different products available to us. And so certainly during the pandemic, we had a brief lag, and now we need to pick it back up.
Yeah, so I saw the need close hand. Actually, when I was a university student, one of my summer jobs was as an operating room attendant.
Okay.
So I would be the person, the porter that would go, you know, to the blood bank, get blood. So even for, as you mentioned, very routine elective surgeries, often there would be a need. But now I get to see it on the flip side, because when you posted after we donated, partially because you're an influencer.
No.
I saw the flood. I saw the flood of people in your mentions.
Yeah.
So grateful that you gave once. What was that like for you to see in real time?
Yeah, that was surreal because for me, you know, I like to post every so often just what I'm doing in general. You were in it, so don't try to divert away from that. But just in terms of what I read the comments, it was like either I've had a blood transfusion my son had a blood transfusion, my mom, my dad, like just so many people who are relating exactly to this. And they're thanking me. I'm like, listen, I'm not like, I don't feel like a hero by doing this. I feel like this is actually something that just should be done. Like, I don't feel like, you know, it's anything exceptional. I feel like, like I said, it should be normalized. But the fact that it's not, the fact that people were so grateful really spoke to me. So that's why I personally want to make it a habit, because I just saw the direct impact of people literally telling me their stories. And oftentimes a lot of people are telling me, like, you know, this loved one in my life needs regular transfusions. It wasn't just a one-time life-threatening, you know, maybe a car accident or something like that. No, it was like a regular, like, rotation. And something that I found really interesting in this whole process as well has just been the fact that blood has a shelf life. And that's something that I wasn't also aware of before. So that means, like, the need for, you know, fresh blood, new blood is, like, it's important.
Yeah, no question. This is a good place to remind anyone consuming this content. They can go to blood.ca to find out all the information and also register to give themselves. I am action-oriented. So I always, you know, feel like, you know, okay, but what can we do? Like, what are we going to do in terms of an action item and a plan moving forward? Maybe too much, so my wife says I try to fix everything. But, you know, in terms of opportunities, I look at this, JAMA, similarly to when, from a sporting context, we stepped up and said, well, there's a barrier of entry to vote. Come on down to our arenas. We need a food drive because of a massive issue. We're going to open up our spaces. Do you foresee, above and beyond conversations like this, from a sports context, us being able to use our infrastructure to make it easy and quite frankly, to make it cool?
Yeah, I think, like, sports is pretty incredible. It passes and goes through all these barriers that society faces. So I think that for me, like, what's my action item coming out of this is to talk to the teammates, talk to the players that are on our team and get more dialogue happening. And if they can repost or talk or discuss, that right away in and of itself removes some barriers and makes it kind of cool, right? If one of the Raptor players is talking about giving blood, well, man, I can do that as well if I'm a high school kid at Oakwood or wherever the heck I go to school. And so I think that's really important. And so that's one area that we can make a difference with right away. And I think that, like, stigma is something that's really ingrained and pretty deep rooted. And I think people don't discuss things a lot. But an athlete can break through that. An athlete can find a way to make the dialogue happen and force discussion. And that forced discussion, it's an easy answer to give and to support and to help people. That part's easy. It's getting through the stigma that we need to get to.
Well said. Retweet. I think, you know, as media, we have to cover these athletes. They have high exposure. They are role models for a lot of kids that want to grow up to be just like them. They copy their shots. They copy their style. And so if an athlete and media alike, because we also have our own platforms, can kind of promote this conversation and, like I said before, like, normalize it, make it cool. You know, it's a thing to do. It's cool to give back to a system that, as you said, we will one day be patients in ourselves. And I think that awareness is what's going to, like, definitely propel in the future. And just to think that, like, just the amount of new donors that are needed, just given just how many new Canadians also that, you know, enter the country every single year, like, we got to match that. And so using our platforms, using, like, athletes can use their platforms and make real change in that direction.
Yeah, even in
Just adding to that, I think that one thing with the sort of athletic space is that most people and young people in general think they're invincible. Mm-hmm. And many athletes think that they're just going to, you know, they're going to play for 50 more years and they're going to be fine. But that's not true, mm-hmm. right? And we will age and things will happen to our bodies, and if it's on the athletic field or you know, medically as well, as we continue to grow. And I think that awareness and that sense of, like, we need to do this together, and it's not something that's singular. Like, I don't think with giving blood, it's not about you, right? It's about other people. And I think that's the shift in our mindset that really needs to occur. And it's not about for yourself, right? And athletes, unfortunately, are very, you know, ego-driven, and it's about me and what's going to happen. And that's, I think, a shift, too, that needs to happen and a dialogue that has to occur.
Yeah, and I think people don't really understand. Even, you know, in going home, I told my wife, she's like, oh, it's cool, you saved a life. I was like, incorrect, I saved three. There's some plasma in there as well. It gets filtered, but just having this as part of the natural conversations that you're having. But I think a good place to end it on is it's not just about the community. It's also about the infrastructure. I've already, you know, come up with an idea where, you know, people at Gate 1 of Scotiabank are giving blood, even though I have no idea if that's actually possible or ideal. But in terms of also making it a safe place mm-hmm. for people to come, making it easy, making it in community, what can we do to make sure that we're also holding up our end of the bargain and making it easy and aware and safe for people to be a part of the process?
I think this, you know, my goal in life is to actually make our healthcare system more equitable and more accessible for so many more people, but that starts with building trust in spaces that we have lost that trust because of the way that we have treated our patients, specifically our Black and BIPOC community, really. And it's so important that we build that trust again by being invited into those communities and building the relationship with leaders in the community and the community itself to show that we are respectful and understanding that there is a need, and the reason behind why we're coming isn't to use anybody's blood for any malpurposes, but actually for their people and for the community at large. And that really has discussions, a larger discussion around how do we do that and how do we build that trust. But I think going into the community, having these discussions, showing that it's cool or that it actually makes an impact in terms of yourself but also your family members is a really big piece of that. Sharing stories. Everybody who knows somebody who has benefited from blood donation generally starts to donate blood themselves. And I think sharing these stories can be a really big part of that. We need to do better in healthcare to build trust with our patients. And I think having these discussions is a first part. And I always tell my patients, I'm like, this is your opportunity to rebuild equity within our healthcare system as well, not to put it on our patients, but to say, if you see that there is definitely an equity in access to care within healthcare, and here's your role to bridge that gap a little bit more so that you and your family and your community is taken care of. And that's where I think we start.
And I don't want to lead a conversation about eradicating misinformation by misinforming. I should say it's important, as I shared off the top, for me, I was called to support community, but when you're giving, you're not just going to be a match potentially for someone who looks like you. Really, we need more blood for everyone.
For everybody, mm-hmm. absolutely. And I think just knowing that you have a role to support our entire community at large is a big piece of that too. And addressing misinformation is key. Acknowledging that it can feel scary at first, like we've done here, and getting that needle can be scary at first. There's many people have fear of needles. But if we can talk about those things, address that, and realize that you can have such a huge impact, that's really where we need to go.
Awesome. So you're going to go post. You're going to go talk to your guys. Mm-hmm. You're going to go back into the community and do the great work that you do. And I'm going to go get blood.
Thank you so much for listening. I know for our hardcore sports fans, this episode was a little bit of diversion from that, but one that I think is worthy of full discussion because of the importance of the topic and the urgency we need to all start to give. So it's very simple. If you are looking for some place locally for you to be able to donate, blood.ca is the place to go. I think the other thing I learned going through this process is donating in a way can be a lifesaver in terms of maybe some people have to donate to give blood because of the levels of iron that are in their blood or different health conditions that they have. Also, when you go through the process, you learn your blood type, and in a scenario where you need blood desperately, knowing your blood type is actually very, very valuable and could be critical to saving your life or someone else's. So once again, blood.ca is the website where you can get more information. On behalf of Dr. Sheila and Savannah and Jamma, thank you so much for listening. Please give if you can.